Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 102 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley and alongside me this week I have Mr. David Cameron Walker. Oh no, that's right, I don't, because DC has ditched us to go and take part in a football manager quiz. You'd never do that, would you, Carl? Oh no, that's right, Carl's not here either. Oh well, it's a good job I've got Adam Williams with me. No, he's at work in Reading. Oh well, Jim Knight, just me and you then, mate. He's not here either. What? For the first time in over 100 shows, it's just me, the ever-present, in the studio. However, I am pleased to say that Jim might not be here, but he is on the phone. Hello, mate.
Hello, mate.
Whereabouts are you?
I'm Brighton.
You're in Brighton. You're having a lovely time down there. Well, yeah. It's good of you to come on. How's the weather? That's the first thing you do when someone's away.
Windy.
Okay. Windy. Right. Well, we've got Jim on, thankfully, to help me out here for the first part of the show. I'll explain why in a second. First, a quick reminder to get yourself over to audible.co.uk/going up. Take advantage of our special offer if you haven't already. Free 1 month trial and a free audiobook to walk away with right now. You get to pick from 80,000 books once you sign up. You've also got the option to cancel at any time if you don't want to pay a monthly fee after the first month is over. So you can get books by Sir Alex, Ari, Sid Lowe, Neil Warnock, and many more on their audible.co.uk/going up. So later in the show, we're going to look back on the weekend's action with DC. You'll hopefully be joining us on the phone on this football manager quiz. I'll also be joined by Jefferson Lake, football writer for the Northampton Chronicle and Echo and freelancer for the BBC and Sky. He'll be on the phone to talk about Northampton going rock bottom of the Football League after they lost late on again. 1-0 to Plymouth for the weekend. We'll start though at the other end of the pyramid. Saturday lunchtime, Vicarage Road, one of the biggest games of the season so far in the Championship, and what a result for Leicester City. Nigel Pearce's men thrash Watford 3-0 to go second in the table, just a point behind Burnley, their best ever league start in 129 years. They're also the only Football League side left in the Capital One Cup quarterfinals. How does that sound to you, Jim?
It sounds great, actually, and a draw against Manchester City is just what I was hoping for as well.
Can I just say before we get stuck into this, funny that DC's taken this week off, isn't it, by the way?
I think he times those when Watford get beaten by teams that are he's going to have to get ribbed by.
I think that's right. Well, we've got Jim on the line to talk about this. And first of all, let's say hello to James Sharp, who's a sports writer at the Leicester Mercury. James, thank you very much for coming on the show. You were there at Vicarage Road on Saturday. Obviously, a very lucky opening goal. But in the end, a pretty comprehensive win. What did you make of the performance?
Yes, you could say the first one was quite unfortunate. But to be fair, I think that was probably, with maybe the Wigan game aside, that's potentially the most complete team performance that Leicester have put on this season. There wasn't really one player who you could say had a poor game. They all performed to, you'd say, near the top or at the top of their game. And, well, let's put it this way, it was more enjoyable than 6 months ago.
Well, I was going to say that. Jim, there'd been a lot of hype, hadn't there, going into this match, the rematch and revenge and all that kind of thing. You must have been absolutely delighted with the performance that the players put in.
Yeah, I was, particularly because I tipped Watford to go up as well this year, so I knew that it was going to be one of our toughest games. And I think it was one of those fixtures alongside Forest and Derby that you look for on the fixture list first, because you want to see, you know, when do we go back to Vicarage Road to try and lay those ghosts to rest. But as James has already alluded to, it was a brilliant performance. You know, it was a team performance. And I think that's what Nigel Pearson's been after for, you know, the last couple of months, try and get a team performance together where everyone pulls their weight. We did have a bit of luck go our way. Chris Wood's goal's not going to happen every week. But if you don't chase those balls down, you're not in the position to, you know, get the lucky deflection. So all credit to Chris Wood's come in. Off the back of Jamie Vardy's injury, which is unfortunate because he's been in brilliant form, and I've been kind of singing his praises a lot on the pod. He's taken his opportunity, and he looked solid. I was very pleased, and it's always good to get another 3 points on the board and put some pressure on Burnley, at the top of the league.
Yeah, we're just a point behind now. And James, it was slightly strange, wasn't it, the way it worked out, in the fact that obviously Knockhart missed the penalty last season, Almunia saved it, and in this game Almunia made the error and Knockhart scored.
Yeah, it was, you could say it was the journalist's dream, actually.
Yeah,
going back, and the amount of times I've written Exercise Demons and Redemption over the past couple of days.
And about Halloween was good for all the demon stuff as well.
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah, I'd said in my previous piece, it's quite fitting that Leicester returned to Vicarage Road on the weekend of Halloween. But to be fair, I've got to say to Knockhart, he's a 21-year-old lad, and he got dog's abuse from the moment the game started to the point that he came off the field, and he dealt with that superbly. It would have been easy for someone to shy away in that situation and to kind of hide away on the periphery and not want the ball and not look to get involved as much. But he was the opposite. He was always looking to try and create things. At times he was even too keen. But it just shows the character of him and also of the team that Nigel's put together. And that was something that was really, really quite impressive on Saturday.
Jim, are you seeing sort of big differences from last season here?
Yeah, huge differences. I think one of the things that Nigel Pearson would have been keen to do a bit more is keep a clean sheet, because that's not something we've been doing with any kind of regularity, even at home, you know, where we are very solid. We are winning games, but I think he'd want to keep teams out, and we're kind of sitting deep and maybe inviting a bit too much pressure onto ourselves in the last 15, 20 minutes of games when you're 2-1 up. And the last couple of home games, the opposition has gone down to 10 men, so it has made it a little bit easier. But there's still been a few hairy moments. You know, Kasper Schmeichel has had to make a couple of good saves. So I think, yeah, he will have been very pleased with that. The new centre-back pairing of Wes Morgan and Wesolowski, James will be able to correct me on the pronunciation of that, because he writes about him and spells his name a lot more than I do in my job. So
it's Vasilevsky, because Nigel corrected me.
Clarified it for you.
A couple of occasions.
Yeah, you know, he looks a brilliant acquisition. 33, sometimes, you know, eyebrows can be raised when you pick up players like that on a free. Came in from Anderlecht over the summer when his contract expired, and he looks a good centre-back, and he'll be another great role model as well for Liam Moore. I know I've spoken about him a few times on the pod. Liam Moore, a very promising youngster who's actually been shifted to right-back now because of Richard Delatt's injury or series of injuries over the last couple of weeks. So he's playing a position that he's not been playing for the majority of the season. But that's just kind of, it's made the back line stronger, I think. He's not a natural fullback, Liam Moore. He doesn't quite have the natural capabilities of Richard Delatt. He's a bit more built for central defence, I think. But he's turned his hand to it brilliantly. It just shows how adaptable he is. And the likes of Jeffrey Slough as well, being able to slot in at left back, because that was one of the key decisions that we made in the playoffs last year, to have him up against Anya on the wing to try and nullify his pace. We kind of dropped Konchesky and had Slough there, and those tactical decisions were made again on Saturday, either enforced or tactically, and it came off.
Well, James, I was going to say, I mean, a lot has been made about Leicester going forward and the goals you've scored this season, and David Nugent and Vardy and Dyer and so on. But defensively, what have you made of the way it's shaped up this season so far?
It's been a bit of an odd one, really, because Nigel Pearson, he's said it a lot in the recent weeks, is that he wants the team to keep more clean sheets, and his managerial style tends to mirror the kind of player that he was. A good old fashioned centre half, likes to build from the back and use that as a platform to then go forward. And in recent weeks, it's the first clean sheet in 10 games, which has been quite surprising, really. But I agree with the point that Jim said, is that Vasilevsky does look like a top signing. And while, yeah, he may be over 30, but I think signing those players that are over 30 is something that has been a key difference this year to what it was last year, and something that is one of the reasons I think why Leicester are doing better this season so far than they did, say, at the end of last season, because last season Leicester had the third youngest squad in the whole football league, and young players are, by their nature, are inconsistent, so they will have dips in form. And we saw last season that once they did that, they didn't have the necessary experience to get over it. Whereas this season, the players are only a year older and have learned from their experiences. But also, the players that Nigel has brought in to offset that youth experience are players that, like Dean Hammond and Vasilevsky and Gary Taylor Fletcher, who are over 13, who have been there and who have done it, and so are able to pass on that experience and use that experience and know how in games to grind out results, shall we say.
Can I just say what a difference 6 months makes as well? Because if someone had said 6 months ago that Nigel Pearson was being linked with other jobs, you'd have thought because, you know, he was being sacked or about to be given the boot. And now, obviously, the rumours about Chris Hughton at Norwich, potentially Jim being in a bit of trouble and people linking Pearson. And now I imagine Leicester fans just wouldn't want him to go anywhere.
No, I was very much of the opinion that I thought he would go, but I didn't necessarily agree that he should have gone, mostly because there's been a lot of change at Leicester in the last kind of decade or so. We've not really had a period of stability since Martin O'Neill left, way back when, you know, when the glory days, as I remember them, of Leicester. And we needed someone, especially this year with the financial fair play. And James, obviously, will probably know a lot more about this. He's looked at the finances, I would imagine, or the Leicester Mercury have on several occasions, and Radio Leicester guys. We've got to balance the books, and we had a huge wages to turnover ratio last year. It's really important that we cut down the squad, and Nigel was the best person for that because he's brought in a lot of these players, or he inherited a lot legacy-wise from Sven and managers before them on huge wages. But he's gone through and he's got rid of the likes of Neil Dans and Jermaine Beckford and people like that who are on big wages. And, you know, I'm sure we still have quite high wages to turnover ratio, but he's cut his cloth accordingly. And he's put faith in the younger players, Liam Moore, Jeffrey Schlupp. Tom Hopper was on the bench on Saturday because of Jamie Vardy's injury. So, you know, there's every chance that he could start getting some starts or at least some game time as the season goes on, because it is a long, hard season. And the season has started well, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we will have a wobble at some point, I'm sure. Hopefully just not as long of a wobble as last season, which basically equated to January onwards. More of a free fall than a wobble.
James, is Jim right in what he says there about sort of reorganising the squad to sort of meet financial fair play?
Yeah, definitely. Nigel is the kind of manager that you would want if you are looking to build with on a limited budget. Leicester don't have a limited budget because, in the sense that their owners are billionaires, but with financial fair play coming in, and it's something that is only just coming to the fore, but we understand it's something that clubs have known about for the past couple of seasons, and probably is one of the reasons why Nigel was brought in. But he has done that, and if you look at the squad that they've got now, we did a piece in the Mercury a couple of weeks ago looking at all the players that have since departed since Sven's been or was at the club. And the list is almost endless. And off the top of my head, the only players of the Sven era that are still regular first team players in the squad are Casper and Konchesky and Nugent. I'm pretty sure that they are the only three that are really pushing for first team.
Yeah, I think that's the only three, isn't it?
Yeah, the wage bill is still a problem. They've got to cut 20-odd million off the wage bill, which is a catastrophic figure for the Championship. But there's still players like Konchesky, who is, I think, the club's biggest earner, and even players like Lloyd Dyer and Paul Gallagher, who's just gone on loan to Preston. These are all players that signed new contracts under Sven, and signed long contracts under Sven. So.
Well, what's the situation with contracts now? Because I gather that they're not going to offer contracts to players just yet, are they?
No, they're not. There are talks happening. So, for example, Wes Morgan, he came out and did a piece with us the week saying that he has been, there have been talks about a new contract, but there hasn't been one laid in place. And it's quite worrying for a Leicester City fan to know that 11 of their players are out of contract at the end of the season, as is Nigel Pearson. And as yet, no new deals being signed. And when it comes to January, other clubs can approach their players and they can sign pre-agreements to sign. So it's potentially could be quite a worrying time. I think what they're doing is waiting until January, seeing where they are, and then perhaps we will see some contracts being signed.
Jim, let's move this on a bit and talk about the season going forward. Nottingham Forest, just down the road there, have lost their last two games and they come to the KP on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a huge game, and I for one am really happy. I'm sure James will agree with this, the fact that they've left it as a 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, because a lot of our big games, particularly last season, were kind of butchered. Our schedule was horrific, and obviously working and living in London, it's difficult to get back to games that are on a Friday night, you know, at 7:45 kickoff.
Well, Sky moved a couple more today, haven't they?
Well, yeah, they have. And I did tweet about this today, and it does seem to kind of be going that way, but thank Forest game alone, which is great because I think it'll improve the atmosphere for both sides. We'll get more people through the gate, and you know, we are still even in our best attendances, I think are in the region of like 24,000-25,000 in a 32,500 seat stadium. So we're not full to brim by capacity. So it's going to be hopefully a really good like cauldron like atmosphere because both teams are gunning for promotion this year. Both got a kind of a point to prove, especially with Forest losing their last two. They don't need to bounce back, and that inherent rivalry will always be there.
And they want to get one over on you for the last day of last season as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that adds another caveat to it. You know, James, as you said, it's a headline writer's dream when stuff like that happens, and it throws up these kind of last gasp, would you believe it moments that are kind of going to go down in folklore, that Leicester pipped Forest to the final promotion spot with the Anthony Knockhart goal in front of our fans in the 92nd minute or whatever, after being a goal down at one point as well. So it's going to be a very interesting game, but we're supremely confident, I think, and there's that buzz around the side after winning after 8 in a row at home. So we've got no reason to be scared of that team, and we just need to go out and play our stuff, and I think if we do, we'll get a win.
Confidence is obviously very high. Looking at the table at the moment, as it stands, Burnley are top. They lead with 33, Leicester on 32, and everyone recognises, James, that QPR are going to be very strong as well. Do you think that QPR are going to be in one of those top two places? And if so, it all depends on getting that other one, doesn't it?
Yeah, at the minute, it's difficult to see QPR. If you had to put your money on it, you'd say that they would be occupying one of the two automatic spots. Burnley are obviously flying at the minute. The question mark over that is whether they can maintain it. But with QPR, they're just churning out results. They kept 8 clean sheets in a row. That is unprecedented, really. And they, I think, will be in one of the top two positions. It's basically a case now of who can maintain that form throughout the rest of the season. Nigel has, even though City are flying at the minute, he has made the point on a number of occasions. He keeps dropping into his replies to questions that there will be a dip at some point. There will be a dip, but we are more adept at being able to deal with it this year.
Jim, how about this for a week in December, starting on Saturday the 14th, 12:15, Leicester against Burnley. Then on the Tuesday night, Leicester against Manchester City in the quarterfinal of the League Cup. And then the following Saturday at Loftus Road, QPR against Leicester. That could be quite a big week.
It's going to be a huge week, isn't it? I think one of the key things that we need to mention here when we're talking about Leicester, and obviously people might not necessarily know this, if they, you know, our League Cup games haven't been televised, we're still making quite a lot of changes to our team going into these League Cup games. Nigel is kind of staying true to his word that promotion is the key aim, and I think there's a lot of focus at this time of year if teams from the Championship or below kind of make it to this level, that they, you know, they put a lot of pressure on teams to try and make it this cup run and kind of this fancy dream of getting to Wembley. But we made 5 changes, I think it was, against Fulham. Granted, they made 9, but they're a Premier League team, so you'd kind of expect that. And we still came out on top. They're not in brilliant form at the moment, but to beat a Premier League team, even with 5 changes, is a fantastic result. So it will be interesting to see what kind of team Nigel names against Manchester City. I think he will stay true to his guns. He will make some changes, I probably expect, in the region of 4 or 5 changes from the Burnley game. So it will be, it's not going to be a season defining week, but it's certainly going to be a very, very big one for Leicester fans.
And James, Leicester have got history in the League Cup as well. It'd be great to see them go one step further than this, get to a semi-final, maybe a final.
Yeah, they do. I mean, the stars do seem to be aligning. The last time Leicester beat Fulham in the League Cup was when they went on to win it in 2000, so that's not a bad omen. The thing with, it's difficult nowadays because fans love cup runs and they love the romance of the cup, and it's always a chance of getting silverware. But it is difficult to balance that with the main aim, which is promotion. I think Jim's right. He will make changes. He said he made 5 for the Fulham game, and he made, off the top of my head, 9 or 8 for the Derby game. But the thing that he stressed in the build-up to the Fulham game was that as much as he made changes, it wasn't a case of weakening the side, which I think was true against Fulham. The side, even though there was 5 changes, the side didn't look fragmented like it did against Derby. The first half against Derby was woeful, if we're being honest. But the Fulham game, even the changes, they worked, and the team still played and passed the ball around confidently as though those players have been playing together week in, week out. But I think that ultimately comes with the team spirit they've got there, the form that they're in, the home form, Fortress King Power. If he makes 5 changes for the Man City game, I don't really think you could that would be a weakened side.
Well, it's certainly looking good for this season as things stand. Thank you both for coming on. Jim, we'll see you next week. We'll let you get back to Brighton Pier.
Thank you, mate. I'll see you next week.
Cheers, Jim. And James, thanks very much for coming on.
No problem at all.
I imagine you're enjoying covering this Leicester side.
I am. I'm loving it. It's as a journalist, obviously, I'm impartial, but I'm a Leicester fan, and I've grown up supporting them. So, yeah, it's a dream for me being able to watch the team that I've grown up watching week in, week out. It's quite a good job.
Very understated. Thanks, James. That's James Sharp, sports writer at the Leicester Mercury and our very own Jim Knight. Right now, we're going to switch our attention from the top of the Championship to the bottom of League Two and talk some Northampton. So all is really not well down at Sixfields. Northampton Town, so close to a glorious promotion 5 months ago, now find themselves propping up the Football League after a 1-0 defeat at Plymouth on Saturday. AD Beveroyd's side have now won just twice in League Two all season, and Saturday's loss was also the fourth time that they've lost in injury time after late defeats to York, Exeter and Rochdale. Jefferson Lake is a football writer for the Northampton Chronicle and Echo and a freelancer for the BBC and Sky Sports, and I'm pleased to say that Jefferson is on the line to speak to me right now. Jefferson, you were there at Home Park at the weekend. This is beginning to get a little bit like Groundhog Day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, albeit in, you know, slightly different venues. So I've got to about 10 minutes to go on Saturday, and a guy who's also from Northampton who was with me in the press box. So we looked at one another on Saturday and sort of thought, oh dear, it's, you know, it wasn't as though Plymouth were having sort of wave after wave of pressure or whatever, but there was sort of a grim inevitability about it when they did score. And it's, yeah, it's, I mean, if it happens once or twice, I mean, you always get one or two in a season, and it's sort of, you know, any more than that is a very, very concerning pattern. I don't think it's a fitness thing. I think it's purely a mental thing and a concentration thing, but it's happening far too often at the moment for AD Beveroyd not to be enormously concerned about it.
I was going to ask about the fitness thing. You just think it's a case of not players sort of running out of energy or anything, nothing to do with the training. It's just on the day that they just can't quite keep it together when they're coming under late pressure.
Yeah, I think it is really a concentration thing. Although having said that, on Saturday, he noticeably didn't make any substitutions in the game at all. Now, I guess that was because he was happy with how they played, and, you know, his post-match interview bore that out. He said he was happy for 85 minutes, but they switched off in the last five. They're sort of all different kinds of goals as well they concede in these periods. The losses to Rochdale and Exeter were both kind of counter-attack goals, whereas the one on Saturday was where the defence was set, and that sort of Plymouth actually put a good little passing move together and you know, like a midfield runner went and wasn't tracked, and they threaded the ball through and he took the goal really well. So it's the fact that they're all different types of goals makes me think that it's perhaps not necessarily a fitness thing. It's more a concentration and a mental thing.
Okay, well, let's take stock of AD Beveroyd's time there, because that was his 100th game in charge on Saturday. He came in just under 2 years ago, kept the club in the Football League in his first season, got to the playoff final on the brink of promotion last season. I guess the obvious question for fans looking at it from the outside, like me, is what on earth has gone wrong?
Well, they made a lot of changes in the summer. You know, several people think that too many changes were made in the summer. I think 11 players left and 11 arrived, which is fairly standard for, you know, for League Two. You quite often get these vast turnovers of players, but the team wasn't far away last year, and it only sort of needed perhaps a little bit of minor surgery here and there. Obviously, there were a couple of things that were out of his control. Clark Carlisle retired. Lee Nichols, who was the goalkeeper last season, who was only on a season loan from Wigan, went back to Wigan. He was an excellent player. Top goal scorer, Adebayo Akinfenwa, left. He was sort of one of the bigger earners. And there was, I think there was sort of a will to get him off the wage books, even before the season finished. And I'm not sure that he and Eddie Boothroyd saw eye to eye, but that's a different conversation from that day. I think it was just perhaps a bit too much was done over the summer. I think there was perhaps a realisation with the playoff game that their style last season, which was a very direct style, very much based around set-piece quality at both ends and a long throw, would only get them so far. And it did sort of see them through in some games. There were games last season at home where they had a fantastic record, but they would win games because they'd score from a long throw-in. And I think when they there was kind of a, although it's never been said, I think there's sort of a, an implication that when they got to that big final with Bradford, who were Vegas side, that that kind of football wasn't going to be enough, that they needed to be able to play a bit more football and a, have a few different sort of options and a bit more about them to be able to actually move on to the next level.
So it's not just the personnel then, it's also the style of play that he's trying to change.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, with that, there has been substantial teething problems. But they're, I mean, the guy with the long throw, Ben Toza, doesn't really get a look in at the minute. They only play with one striker now. There's not a big target.
I was going to ask you about that because I've read quite a lot of tweets from Northampton fans saying that they feel they're playing one up front a lot and they're inviting pressure onto them, which might be perhaps a reason why they're conceding so many late goals.
Yeah, I think with that, I think there's two things there, is that most of their strikers are injured, and also because they're in such a bad situation, I think they are very defensive away from home, especially, you know, of the sort of the view that if they can get a point from the game, then that's a good return for where they are at the moment. Of course, that does lend itself to the other team having a lot of the ball, and that was the downfall at, certainly at Rochdale and Plymouth.
Just looking at the team that played against Bradford then at Wembley, you mentioned Lee Nicholls. Also, obviously, you mentioned Clark Carlisle and Akin Fenua. Also, I make it Luke Guttridge as well, Ben Harding. That's five of the team who played at Wembley who are all not at the club. And presumably, these are all, obviously, Boothroyd signings. He's had time, he's had money to spend. I think some fans think he's had quite a good budget for a League Two club. Presumably, he doesn't really have any excuses at this point.
No, the budget is healthy. Of those players, just to clear up, those other two, Guttridge and Harding, were both offered contracts, but I, from my understanding, not on what they were on, and I think they were a bit miffed. I mean, I've not spoken to them, but I would imagine you would be, you know, if you play your part in getting a team to sixth in the league in a playoff final, to then be given essentially a pay cut to stay, didn't sit too well with them, and they've both since
moved on. Guttridge scored that goal, didn't he, in the semi-final, which got them to
Wembley. Fantastic goal, yeah. Yeah, brilliant goal. And I mean, he was sort of in and out a little bit in the second half of the season, but they were noticeably better when he played. And that was sort of one of the ones that I would really I would query from the summer. I mean, all the others you can kind of make a case for it to an extent, but Guttridge was one that perhaps they could have kept hold of him for a bit longer. I think because of his age, I think he's 31, 32, they wanted someone who could progress with the club. But I think he would still have been a good option for another year or even 2 years, really.
So in terms of the players that have come in then, who are sort of the big ones that haven't worked so far?
Well, I think the one that a lot of people will say that have been disappointed with mainly so far is probably Darren Carter. Came to the club from Cheltenham. He was released by Cheltenham and they signed him on a two-year deal to sort of some fanfare, really. I mean, he was arguably their marquee signing of the summer.
Well, he's ex-Birmingham, isn't he?
Birmingham, West Brom. You know, he's played at a good level, good pedigree, you know, and ticks all the boxes for Boothroyd because he's 6'2", he's got a left foot, it's a good engine, you know, a good athlete. And I think, you know, him coming kind of cushioned the blow of losing certainly Harding and probably Guttridge to an extent as well. But he's, I mean, it's a little harsh to say this, but he's done almost nothing. it's one of those where, you know, they were with them playing the system they are with one up front, he was kind of playing as the furthest midfielder forward, almost as a 10, really. And he was doing quite well with that. But still, I mean, his influence on games is nowhere near what people thought it would be. And, you know, speaking to a few Cheltenham fans, they sort of thought that he'd done well for them last season and was unlucky not to be in their side. But, at the moment, he's not lived up to that billing at all.
Now, DC, who'd usually be sat in the seat opposite me, is a Watford fan, and he always goes on about Boothroyd's time at Watford and how he played direct football there was very successful. Did the majority of fans last season, when they were doing well, want to see the style of play changed, or is this someone who sort of made the decision over the summer that he's going to do this? Because right now I'm sure that they would take the direct style for a few more wins.
Yeah, definitely. I think with Northampton fans, and probably the case with any football fans, I think as long as the team's winning, I don't really care. The problem with that last season was that it was just completely effective at home. They had the best or the second best home record in the division, but was a complete failure away from home. They had either the worst or the second worst away record last season. So it kind of only worked to a point. Now, I think as well as the fans, you know, not being happy with what we were being happy with that, the direct style, I think the Boothroyd perhaps wasn't necessarily happy with it. I think he's quite sensitive to that being branded as a purveyor of the long ball game. Perhaps sort of a little bit damaging to him from an ego point of view, perhaps, that people keep saying that about him. And he wanted, I think this season, he wanted to prove that he could put a team together that can go both ways. But I think at the moment, I mean...
Well, does he still have the support?
Definitely take wins over
well, I was going to say, does he still have the support of the majority of fans there? Or I mean, I noticed he got given the dreaded vote of confidence, didn't he, by the chairman last week?
Yeah, although I would say that was more, you know, knowing the chairman reasonably well, I would say that was a vote of confidence in its traditional meaning of an actual okay. vote of confidence rather than the one that normally arrives a week or two before the sack. He has his detractors, certainly, among the fans. There is a quite a vocal minority of supporters, which is growing with every bad result, as it obviously will. There's been no chanting against him as yet, but there has been sort of boos at half times and full times of games when they've been behind and haven't played well. So there is some dissent there. But I would say he's still just about, you know, it's probably 60-40 split, maybe something like that, in his favour.
Okay.
So it's close, and it's the tide is turning against him with the poor run they're on.
Well, one thing that's got a tendency to finish off a struggling manager is a cup upset. And Sunday, Northampton are away at Bishop Stortford in the FA Cup first round. It's live on ITV. Bishop Stortford play in the Conference South, which is the sixth tier, I believe. Obviously, ITV have got this game for telly. They smell a giant killing. Could there be one?
Well, yeah, completely. I mean, it's got all the ingredients. It's kind of the perfect storm, really. To the point where some people are even saying a Bishop Stortford win would be going with form. I mean, they're third in their division, which suggests they've won a lot of games. I don't know the exact figure, but Northampton have only won twice this season. And if a player, Northampton should go there and win. But obviously, having the home advantage with Bishop Stortford and with the form there and the confidence they will have, Northampton are really low confidence at the minute. They're a real low ebb in terms of that. It could easily be an upset, and you know that would be pretty bad for the club and for Boothroyd.
I mean, bottom of the Football League and out of the FA Cup to a non-league team.
First round. Yeah, it's one of them where it's actually wouldn't make that much difference in terms of the season. You know, they're not going to go and win the FA Cup. Very, very rarely do they even get to the third round and get the sort of the glamour tie. But in terms of sort of a PR exercise, it would be awful. It would be, you know, especially being on national TV and stuff.
Well,
and it certainly wouldn't do him any favours.
Everyone listening to this will get to see them on the telly on Sunday.
Yeah. Now, enjoy that feature of football.
Now, 2 weeks ago, Jefferson, I noticed that the club announced plans for the redevelopment of Six Fields, an increased capacity, more corporate boxes, more seats, supporters bar, a gym. Planning application's been submitted and £12 million loan from the council. Given that the league position and where Northampton could be playing, i.e. what division they could be playing in next season if it carries on like this. Is this such a good idea, do you think?
It's been going on for so long that I don't think that they would you know, consider sort of postponing it or cancelling it or anything like that. I think it would be it's a massive step forward for the club in terms of the long-term development and progress of the football club. They moved to Six Fields from the county ground in 94 and that was seen as a major step forward in terms of doubling the attendance, bringing in a lot more people to a much nicer environment to watch football. And this would be the next step on that path. It would be huge for the club. It would enable them to bring in a lot more money through corporate hospitality, which they don't have a facility for now at all, really.
Jefferson, just wanted to ask a couple more questions. One, compared to a couple of years ago when Gary Johnson left and Boothroyd came in, how do you compare the situation the club were in then to now? Are they stronger? You know, they've got a stronger squad now. Have they got a weaker squad? Yeah. What are their chances of staying up?
It's a funny one because although they are now lower in the league table and probably having worse results, squad for squad, perhaps there's not a lot in it. I mean, there's a lot of players injured at the minute. When those players are back, that would make a big difference. Johnson didn't necessarily have the injuries, but away from results and actual sort of tangibles, the situations are enormously different. I hate the cliche "lost the dressing room" because I'm not sure it ever really happens. But if I've been doing this job for 9 years now, and if there's a manager who has not been supported entirely by his players, then it was probably Johnson in that time. And I'm not getting that with Boothroyd. I think everyone is still, all the players are still playing for him. With Johnson, there were lots and lots of off-field issues, not just with players, but with staff. You know, the general atmosphere around the club was very bad. And I think they were sort of only headed in one direction at that point. And they would have yeah, they would have probably gone down if he'd stayed.
And I suppose a very frustrating fact must be for Northampton fans that there is one team on fire at Six Fields this season, playing brilliant attacking football and scoring loads of goals, but it's not Northampton.
No, it's obviously, I went to the first Coventry game and did a sort of a feature on it for the paper. I haven't seen them since, but yeah, they were excellent. The first game they beat Bristol City, I think it was 5-4.
Yeah, what a game that was.
It was a brilliant game. Best game I've seen in Six Fields for years. but yeah, it was, you know, they're a fantastic attacking team. Stephen Presley is a manager who I think is really sort of destined for better things in the future. Yeah, they looked a really good side. I'm not sure that they've started stealing Northampton fans just yet. But, I know there are a few sort of old boys that go over there because it's quite. Yeah. I think it's only sort of 10 or 12 quid to go in on a Sunday. So
two games one weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get a double in. So yeah, that's a strange one. But I think certainly Northampton as a club are happy with it. I know some of their fans are, and obviously the Coventry fans aren't happy. But this is football, isn't it?
It is. All right, cheers for coming on, Jefferson. We appreciate that. Let's hope it turns around for all the Northampton fans' sake. That is Jefferson Lake, football writer for the Northampton Chronicle and Echo, and a freelancer for the BBC and Sky Sports. Next, then, it's time for the latest in our My Club series. Remember, we're giving fans of all Football League sides 125 seconds to tell us about their club, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, it's all about Wolverhampton Wanderers.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Graham Large and my club is Wolverhampton Wanderers.
So Graham, can you remember your first ever game at Molineux?
Vaguely. It was November the 10th, 1990.
Come on, it can't be vaguely if you remember the exact date.
It was my sixth birthday.
I see. And who was it against?
Wolves beat Newcastle United 2-1 at home.
What a start. And in terms of all the big Wolves games at Molineux, obviously you've had Premier League games and big promotion deciders. What's the one that would stick in your head?
Probably in the 2010-2011 season when we ended Manchester United's unbeaten run, winning 2-1 at Molineux. George Ellacobe grabbed the first goal and he arguably grabbed the second one, even though it was actually given to Kevin Doyle by the Dubious Goals Committee.
It's the damn Dubious Goals Committee. Now, Kevin Doyle's still there, I noticed, scored at the weekend. How are you finding life under Kenny Jackett?
It's been positive. It's obviously been a big transformation with a few big name players leaving in the summer. We've lost the likes of Carl Henry and Stephen Ward, Sylvain Ebanks, Blake, Stephen Hunt, players along those lines. But we've managed to bring in a few of the younger players, such as Jack Price and Lee Evans, into the fold. Danny Bartson playing an increasingly big role at the heart of our defence. And also, we've brought Lee Griffiths back from an extended spell at Hibernian, and he's been scoring for fun this season.
So it's all going well at the moment, but I know that in your time supporting Wolves, you will have had some low moments. What's the worst ever moment you've had as a Wolves fan?
You can pretty much take your pick from 46 games from last season, to be honest. But I don't think they got much lower than the home game against Burnley last season when we lost 2-1.
Couple of quick fire ones to end. Your favourite ever Wolves goal?
Alex Ray against Bolton in the Premier League, 40-yard volley.
And the worst manager who's managed Wolves in your time supporting the club?
Either Terry Connor or Dean Saunders. I couldn't pick between the two of them.
You've had a few, haven't you? Graham, your time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, so we'll have another one of those on the show next week. Right now, it's time to do our weekend review. Now, it's just me, obviously, in the studio this week, but I have got old David Cameron Walker on the line, direct from the Football Manager quiz, which I believe is just about to start.
Hello.
We've had... nice of you to come on, by the way.
Well, so I paint the picture. I'm currently standing outside the Nando's, which is on Clink Street, just opposite the Thames from St. Paul's. I'm looking at St. Paul's in all its resplendent glory.
Oh, lovely. Well, I was saying to Jim and James earlier, well, I said to Jim, sort of, mainly, that funny that you should take a week off after that result of the weekend. Watford nil, Leicester 3. Let's get your verdict. We've had them talking about Leicester earlier in the show. From a Watford perspective, it's not really going to plan this season, is it?
Well, what goes around comes around, I suppose, in the minds of the Leicester fans. We set ourselves up for it, really, because, as you can expect, all the attention before the game was from Sky and also, unfortunately, from Watford inside the ground, was on that game last season. They were showing the clips of the Sky Sports news report of Deeney's goal. They were showing the Watford commentary of that on the big screen. Harry the Hornet, our mascot, reenacted the whole 30 seconds himself, one man show, which was wonderful. But it was all like, you know, let's think about that goal last season, and that's all the motivation Leicester needed. They came out the blocks quicker than us, and they were better than us for the 90 minutes.
What could Sola have done differently?
Well, I mean, obviously the first goal didn't help. Almunia punting it straight into the face of Chris Wood obviously puts you on the back foot straight away. But what could he have done differently? It's not as simple as that, really. I think he is a bit hamstrung at the moment by the fact that we're missing key players from last season. There's been a lot of focus from Watford fans on the moment, the fact that Almen Abdi, our player of the season last year, has been injured. There's no sign of him coming back anytime soon. He's got a mysterious injury. They don't really know what's going on with him. They don't know when he's going to come back. He was a linchpin of our midfield last season. He linked the play very well. He got goals. He set up goals. He's missing, and that's a big problem. We haven't got Nathaniel Shalabar. He went back to Chelsea since gone on to Nottingham Forest. The replacements for him this season haven't been good enough. We don't have Matheus Vidra from last season. He was a crucial player for us, particularly in that mid-season period where we went on that big run and really got ourselves into the promotion picture. He could run past players. He could run in behind defence. He could stretch defences. We don't have anyone else with his pace. Deeney, who was superb for us last season, isn't playing at his best this season. He's been injured. He's had a couple of games out. He's still trying to get back to full fitness, but he's not the player at the moment that he was last season. We haven't played, we've hardly had two games in a row where we've played in the same back three, which is, you know, and that's you've been able to see that, particularly in the game against Derby a few weeks ago. We lost 3-2 at home. They were just like strangers. So there's a lot of things going wrong at the moment. We're not as good as last season, despite me thinking that we would have been at the start of the season. Some of the players that we came in with good pedigree haven't quite been up to it. Someone like Diego Fabbrini has shown it in fits and starts, but not consistently. Forestieri is having a good season, but he can't do it all on his own. You know, Josh McEachran looks good on loan from Chelsea, but, you know, we missed the combative nature of Jonathan Hogg. We let Eustace go in the summer. There's a real collection of things that are all going wrong for Watford at the moment. But despite all that, we're still not a million miles away from the promotion picture. We're still 7th, only 1 point off the playoffs. We're 10 points away now from second place, which does seem a big gap even at this stage of the season.
And you're knocking that stand down, aren't you? Interesting camera view on Saturday.
Yeah.
That's not the rookery end, is it?
No, the rookery end
thank
is
God
not.
For that.
The rookery end is behind the goal.
Right, I see.
But that stand, and that's the stand that I watched my first ever game of live football in. So it does have some good memories for me and for many people, but it's been there since 1920s or something ridiculous like that. It's been there forever. It's been condemned for the last 4 years. It had to be knocked down. So that's the one bit of good news, is that's being knocked down, and then we'll have a new stand up there before the end of the season.
Down the bottom of the Championship, Sheffield Wednesday got their first win of the season.
Yeah, of course they did.
They were the only club yet to... I'll tell you what, you think that's a bad bet. I had, in one of my accumulators, I had Stoke Southampton to be 0-0. I was over in 13 seconds.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday beating Reading 5-2. And using the loan system, Dave Jones, Connor Wickham's come in from Sunderland for his second loan spell there.
Well.
And Matty Fryett from Hull, and they both scored. Matt Fryett got a couple, actually, linked up well. So it shows the loan system can work in that situation.
Of course it can. I mean, and you use it to good effect there. And you know, there will be certain people that will question the loan system and say whether it is good for a club like Sheffield Wednesday in the long term, but at the end of the day, if it helps him get points and drag him away from the relegation battle, then that's all they're concerned about at the moment. You know, Connor Wickham is a player that got his big move to Sunderland, and it hasn't really worked out for him. And I saw Adam Williams on Twitter questioning the fact that why Ipswich haven't perhaps tried to get him back.
Good point.
On loan. Maybe they have. Maybe Sheffield Wednesday can pay a bit more money. I'm not sure. But Matty Fryett as well is a player with a point to prove. And, you know, they needed something, didn't they? And those two players have come good for them. But I mean, how long are they going to be there? They're going to be able to extend the loans when they run out. And, you know, it does pose some questions about the long-term future of Sheffield Wednesday, a club like them that's trying to move on. But I suppose the situation that they're in, safety is all that matters at the moment, and they're going to help them, certainly.
Forest 0, Blackpool 1. Forest have lost 2 in a row. Mm. Blackpool, though, might just want to keep Paul Linton, that sort of BBC studio, watching the feed, because I think there's 7 games unbeaten now. And it's that one, Stephen Dobby, who scored the winner.
Alex Ray's doing a find-up. Stephen Dobby as well, a remarkable player he is. Like, he just never seems to find a real home, does he? He gets, you know, he was at Brighton, got on loan to Palace, and then then Palace signed him permanently in the summer. But they signed him permanently in the summer, and then didn't include him in their 25-man squad for the Premier League, which is
bizarre.
Crazy. You know, he's pitched back up at Blackpool, club he's been at before. He's been all over the place. Been at Swansea, scored goals in playoff finals. You know, so hopefully for his sake, I think hopefully he can settle at Blackpool and certainly can help them try and continue their impressive start. I mean, them and Burnley are two clubs that I thought would be nowhere near the promotion picture. You know, I had a very low opinion of Paul Ince as a manager before this, you know, before the start of this season. didn't think he was going to be the right man to really lead Blackpool to any sort of success this season. But fair play to him, even though he's not there at the minute, doing a fine job.
He is. Great goals in the Championship this weekend from Jason Lowe for Blackburn. That was an absolute thunderbolt against Middlesbrough. Jake Forster, a Caskey as well for Brighton at Doncaster. Birmingham in the relegation zone, which is really strange considering they pushed Stoke all the way, didn't they, in midweek in the Capital One Cup, but they're now down in the bottom three. One of the teams who could be replacing them if they do go down is Leyton Orient DC, who won the big game in League One, 3-1 away at Peterborough. I don't know if you've seen the goals. A couple of absolute brilliant goals from David Mooney, who I think now is joint top scorer. And I think I worked out, let me find the thing, I worked out that Leyton Orient can continue to go at this pace, they will end the season with 116 points.
Wow. Well, they're the Orient Express, aren't they, I suppose.
To
beat Peterborough is a real statement. I saw Barry Hearn tweeting after the game, you know, we won't let our feet kind of come off the ground, but we'll keep our feet on the ground rather. And but we are now real genuine contenders for promotion. That result shows that we're not, you know, a flash in the pan. We're not just some team that's had a good run of results at the start of the season that's going to crumble. We are the real deal. And, you know, we've proved to ourselves in the division and to the country that we're good enough. We've now got to keep it going, and they're banging the race for promotion. But, you know, Peterborough losing, it's a real disappointment for them. Wolves are still there. And also, I think I'd keep an eye on Brentford as well. They put behind that little sticky patch, haven't they, at the start of the season.
Won four in a row now, Brentford.
Won four in a row, away win at Crawley at the weekend. They're only, I think, 5 points behind second place now. So plenty of time for them. And I think they'll certainly be, you know, have something to say in the promotion race come the end of the season.
Well, if Wolves beat Carlisle in their game in hand tomorrow, they'll go joint top with Orient. So it shows they've kind of gone perhaps a little bit under the radar so far this season. Coventry certainly haven't. They beat Notts County 3-0. Danny Haynes sent off earlier on. And two goals from Leon Clark and one from Callum Wilson. They've both scored 11 each already. And we're at the start of November. I bet there's plenty of teams who've not scored that many goals combined so far this season.
Yeah, superb. I mean, I sort of jokingly said when they were ejected from, when they left the Rico at the start of the season, that maybe this would be the thing they need to spur them on to success. And I firmly believe it is.
It's a prediction that's, you've got right, isn't it?
Well, yeah, few and far between.
Yeah.
But I still see some Coventry fans sort of saying they want to go back and they want to get the club sorted out. Obviously they do, but I don't know if it does have anything to do with it. But I think just maybe it does, in sort of mentality-wise, in terms of the players playing in that big soulless speech, came to represent everything that went wrong with Coventry. And this season had such a... there's such adversity at the start of the season, and they probably just thought, well, we've got nothing to lose, we've got 10 points, you know, deduction, right, so just go for it. And look at them, I mean, they'd be bang up there, wouldn't they, without the deduction.
Absolutely amazing goal for Joe Jacobson in that division for Shrewsbury. He beat Sheffield United 2-0 down into League 2. Newport lost 4-1 at Fleetwood have gone top of the table, and I know it's sort of changing hands a lot there. And Chesterfield DC, a team we focused on the show a while back, they've not won in 7 games. And their manager Paul Cook says they've forgotten how to win, which is a bit worrying.
Well, that is a problem, isn't it? You do very much need to remember how to win. I mean, Gary Roberts was supposedly the best player in the division. You know, they were flying, but now it's completely gone off the rails. And I think, you know, in the same way, perhaps you look at a club like Leyton Orient, which you're speaking about, you just go on such a run. You can, on the other hand, even if you're perhaps not necessarily playing that badly, if the luck starts going against you, you just, you know, lose a couple of games in a row, it can get into a habit, and then all of a sudden your confidence is completely and utterly drained, which is what seems to have happened at Chesterfield. But you know, since we had Mark Roberts on Fleetwood, they've now gone on to be top of the league, so hopefully that was a good omen for him and for us.
Three from Stephen Schumacher on Saturday in that victory.
Yeah, didn't actually miss time to bury, did he?
Certainly didn't, no. Not last season anyway. Rochdale lost 2-1 at home to AFC Wimbledon. Did you see the thunder and lightning during that game? It's unbelievable. It forced like a power cut. They had to go off for 25 minutes, but AFC Wimbledon came back to get their second away win in their last 14 league games, which is a great result. And DC, we should obviously say best of luck to Joe Thompson, the Tranmere player who's just been diagnosed, hasn't he, with cancer this week. So best wishes to him going forward. I think that's pretty much it.
Well,
so,
the other thing I was going to say was poor old Eddie Boothroyd.
Well, we've already done this, mate. You've missed out.
Propping up the Football League.
This was
a man that once upon a time, when I was travelling down to Vicarage Road for a pre-season friendly against Inter Milan, Sky Sports news camera stopped me and asked me what I thought of Eddie Boothroyd, then one of English football's rising stars, and I said it could be the future England manager. He's barely the future Northampton Town manager now, isn't he?
Well, we've had Jefferson Lake on from the Northampton Chronicle and Echo, so listen back to this podcast and you'll hear a good 20 minutes there of me and him chatting all about it.
Oh, good.
All right, mate. Enjoy your quiz.
Thanks.
Good luck. See ya. There he goes. That's David Cameron Walker at the Football Manager Quiz in London. That is pretty much it for the show this week. Got to say, slightly surreal with me just sat here on my own. A reminder that you can get in touch. The Twitter is at Wagyu Podcast, W-A-G-U Podcast. You can go to the website and read the blogs that are on there. Wearegoingup.co.uk is where you need to go. And if you want to get in touch about any of the guests and stuff you've heard, if you're a Leicester or Northampton fan, by all means, do so. And don't forget to take advantage of the Audible offer as well. audible.co.uk/goingup is where you need to go to get a free 1 month trial of an audiobook. You've got over 80,000 to choose from. That's audible.co.uk/goingup. We are back next week, hopefully more than me sat here, when it is the FA Cup first round. So we'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.